All right, good morning. Welcome to the December 10th, 2024 Audit Committee meeting. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and we're going to begin with roll call.
Member Barr. Member Villanova.
Here.
Member Gilbert.
Here.
Member Nerlin.
Here.
Member Cederberg.
Here.
Vice Chairman Quintero.
Here.
Chairman Maxig.
And I'm here. Next on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any members have any modifications to the agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And that passes unanimously. Next on the agenda is public presentations. Anyone in the public wishing to comment on items that are not listed on the agenda may do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close the public portion and bring it back. Next on the agenda is approval of the August 9th, 2024 Audit Committee meeting minutes. Any members wishing to speak to the minutes? Anyone in the public wishing to speak to the minutes? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board for approval.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That passes unanimously. Next is the consent agenda. There's one item. Approve the quarterly fraud report covering July 1st, 2024 to September 30th, 2024. Any members wishing to comment on the fraud report? Anyone in the public wishing to comment on the consent item? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board for action.
Motion approved.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And that too passes unanimously. Next on the agenda under item 7A is review and approve the compliance audits for the period ranging from July 1st, 2018 through October 10th, 2023 for Internal Services Department and the Probation Department. So staff, the floor is yours. Which one are we going to take up first?
ISD.
Okay.
Good morning. Piher, Audit Manager with the Financial Reporting Audits Division. During our compliance audits for the Internal Services Department, we focus on six key areas: rate development, departmental charges, procurement, payroll, conflict of interest, and work order expenditures. The audit aims to, one, evaluate whether rate calculations are appropriate and are reasonably supported by expenditures; two, assess whether charges are accurately billed to the county departments in appropriate amounts; three, review the sole source procurement process for compliance with applicable laws and regulations; four, examine payroll practices for proper handling and reporting of expenditures; five, assess compliance with conflict of interest practices; and six, ensure work order charges are reasonable, appropriate for work completed. We identify a total of 12 findings and have provided corresponding recommendations. A summary of these findings is presented on the slide in front of you. Detailed information can be found in the audit report that was included in your agenda materials. On the screen is an overview of our findings and recommendations by area. For rate development, we did not receive sufficient supporting documentation, which prevented us from forming an opinion on rate calculations. We do recommend the department document all sources for forecasted expenses and revenues, including justifications for adjustments and assumptions. The department should ensure this documentation is readily available for review. For the second key area for charges to departments, which we have listed on the screen as billing, we identified two findings. The first finding, the department lacked internal controls over charges posted to source systems. And the second finding, the department had missed support or incorrectly allocated journal entries across fiscal years. for billing. We recommend the department implement regular reviews of data entries and ensure accurate charges are allocated. We also recommend the department document discrepancies and address budget shortfalls with the CAO's office. For procurement, we identify a total of three findings, which were: one, noncompliance with the purchasing manual requirements; two, lack of internal controls in the procurement process; and three, discrepancies between required forms and final agreements. And for procurement, we recommend the department update the purchasing manual to allow for digital signatures on form PD1, which is the purchasing request form, and maintain a list of authorized signatories. We also recommend the department require a PD1 form for all departmental contracts, excluding countywide contracts, and ensure complete responses for forms PD47 and PD48. For sole source and suspension of competition requests with the purchasing manager review and approval. And finally, the last recommendation for procurement, the department review the acquisition method for contract P-22-462, and if appropriate, consider offering it as a procurement alternative. And for payroll, we identified two findings. The first finding was for ineffective controls over timesheets, including unsupported clock times and incomplete documentation. And the second finding was for overpayments and underpayments, with the largest overpayment totaling $181.50 and the largest underpayment totaling $271.91. And for payroll, we recommend the department establish written division-specific payroll procedures. We also recommend implementing a robust review process of timesheets and supporting documentation. For conflict of interest, we identify one finding. The department was non-compliant with Form A, the quarterly report of gifts and gratuities, and Form 700, the California Statement of Economic Interest requirements. For conflict of interest, we recommend the department strengthen its processes for reviewing and receiving compliance forms and provide staff with training to ensure consistent adherence to filing forms. And for the last area that we tested was work orders, and we identified it three findings. The first finding was for charges to work orders that were inappropriate or unreasonable. The second was for labor and material costs that were not aligned with the master schedule of fees or departmental costs. And lastly, the department lacked effective controls over the work order process. And for work orders, we recommend the department develop written procedures for work orders and train staff on accurate charge entries and ensure labor rates and materials are updated correctly and famous. We also recommend the department include invoice information and famous for new materials and require vendors to reference applicable work order numbers. This summary provides an overview that identified findings and recommendations, actions to address them. We would like to express our appreciation to ISD staff for their assistance and cooperation during this audit. I'm available for question, and we also have department staff here for questions as well.
All right. So any questions on this audit from members before I go out to the public?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to accuse myself of commenting or, you know, having any action on this particular item, as is my department where I work.
Understood. So if you're going to recuse yourself, you'll actually need to just step out. We'll grab you as soon as we're done with this item. Thank you for sharing that. Any other comments that we have?
I just have a question. That summary document, is that different than what we have in our packet?
It's our presentation. I have copies if you would like a copy.
I just haven't seen that summary before, so.
Some questions I have. This audit, what was the cost of this audit for ISD?
There was a fraud complaint actually related to work orders.
Oh, not the cause, but what the cost. So I know the auditor's office.
I don't have the exact costs with me at the moment.
Okay. One, finding five, lack of internal control over the procurement process of contracts. One of the things that was identified is So you looked at 60 contracts, and you identified issues with 38 of the 60, which is significant. One of the things that you identified was that 17 contracts tested procured materials and services in an amount greater than $200,000, or were approved by the purchasing manager with spending over $200,000, exceeding the purchasing manager's authority. So my specific question is, if contracts were entered into not appropriately, and also if there were contracts signed that exceeding the purchasing manager's authority, did you talk to ISD? Because technically these are outstanding issues where money's already gone out the door. Is something being prepared to be brought back to the Board of Supervisors for retroactive approval on these things? Because technically they can't be cured on their own, I would imagine. I'll look to my our attorney to my left. These are open items until only the board can cure these, correct?
Sure. We have to look at each of the individual situations, I think, because some of them might involve the things like the open ordering with Office Max. In total, the purchasing agent will sign off on and departments will sign off on over 200,000, but that's on a master agreement. So we'd have to look at each individual thing. On a regular contract that stands alone and distinct, yeah, we should do something to authorize those payments, because statutorily the purchasing agent only has authority up to $200,000.
I'm looking at under the cause of condition, one of the issues that was raised is that ISD allowed for purchases to be made through a contract that did not exist. So, I mean, Board of Supervisors would have to cure that. And actually, a contract would have to be put together retroactively to cure that.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions? I could go on and on, but I don't need to. The report speaks for itself. Paul, anything?
I've got a couple questions for Ed, if you don't mind.
Morning.
I know this is a audit that we've been focusing on for some time, but I guess a question, Ed, for you. You know, we've been focusing on these things for a while. Were there any surprises in this audit from your perspective for things that we had noted previously?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Nerland. No, nothing in the audit really stood out as a surprise. We don't argue with any of them. We were expecting to see these types of findings. And since I've been assigned there, since May as the interim, we've already addressed many of these before the audit report came out.
Okay. And I know there was a question on cost and it was unknown, but the department's been billed for costs. Do you know what, I'm just trying to get an idea of the cost of audits to see how efficient they are. What's been, do you know, on an estimate, what has the department been billed for this audit?
The report I have is for our audit, ISD's audit. It was $74,000 what we've been billed so far.
So just the ISD audit is $74,000?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. I'll end by just saying I appreciate our chief operating officer, who has been over there for a number of months now and really has just done an amazing job in putting these things in order. And so I just want to thank Ed publicly for the hard work and all that you've done to rectify the operations over there.
Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item? All right, seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board. And on this particular item, I assume ISD agrees with the findings and you're taking corrective actions to kind of clean up some of the challenges. You want to speak to that maybe a little bit more?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were required to submit a response within 30 days. We did file that response where we agreed to all the findings. We did not dispute any of them nor the recommended actions, and we will be taking actions to rectify all of them other than the ones that we've already rectified.
Can I ask?
Yeah, please.
On the contract issues with the noncompliance, this kind of goes to the auditors and to you. You know, we always deal with the situation where we have forms and we want to use forms, but then whatever contract we get into, the cooperating party, the party on the other side, doesn't always cooperate with exactly what goes in our forms. So I was wondering, in terms of some of the contracts not being in compliance, if those issues, if any of those issues are attributed just to, we had to make variances in contracts, that my office would have been involved in or the department would have been involved in dealing with the other party. We make changes, people don't want to follow a particular, we're having problems right now with our technical exhibit because it's newer for all of our computer companies and they don't want to do that, and we have to go back and forth with them on that. The types of variances in the contracts, what are we looking at there?
So a couple of things there. One, the purchasing manual, as identified in the audit, needs to be updated to clarify many factors, and we're working on addressing that. We have a brand new purchasing manager who's working on updating that. In addition to that, we need to implement better internal controls and processes so we can check that all of those forms and that dialogue is not dropped in the process, which is what happened in these instances.
I can make one last comment, Chairman. Philosophically, when I think back of the Internal Services Department, in particular during COVID, there was a time when it was get it done now, and the department just rose to the challenge, and whatever it took, things got done. And sometimes that involved the contracting as well. We were in emergency mode for a long, long time, and we're no longer in that emergency mode, but I think maybe that's part of the where it may have started was things were getting done during that time. But I think the tightening of what's happening now will put it back in place. But I think that's – I just want to make that comment that looking back on time, the department was one that just stepped up and whatever it took got it done. We had certain authority during that time that was granted to us through an emergency, and some of this may have started then, but the department got things done well during the emergency.
All right, thank you. Seeing no further public comment, I'll close the public portion, bring it back on this. We'll take these items one at a time, so I'll entertain a motion to accept the report as presented.
I'll make a motion to accept.
Is there a second?
Second.
A motion to second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And that carries with one recusal. So I'm now going to bring our member back. You got him? Okay, perfect. Next is second item, the probation department. And again, review and approve compliance audits for the periods ranging from July 1st to October 10th, 2023.
Hi, her audit manager with the Financial Reporting Audits Division. The purpose of this compliance audit was twofold: to review the probation department's conflict of interest practices and to evaluate work order expenditures to ensure charges were reasonable and appropriate for the work completed. We identified a total of two findings with corresponding recommendations provided. And in front of you is also an overview of the findings and recommendations. For a conflict of interest, we identified one finding. The department did not fully comply with the requirements for completing Form A and Form 700. We recommend the department review its processes and procedures for receiving and reviewing compliance forms. We also recommend the department provide staff training to ensure consistent adherence to periodic compliance filing requirements. And for the second finding, work orders, there were certain items charged to work orders which were not reasonable or appropriate given the work completed. Some examples include excessive quantities of items such as 1,000 light bulbs, 226 air filters, and we calculated about 862,000 styrofoam cups were purchased to work orders within a 3-month period. There were also charges approximately $14,000 in parts, labor costs, lift rental charges, and refrigerator apply to close or incorrect work orders, and a $17,000 laser making machine that did not belong to the department. During the audit, the department was unable to provide information justifying work order costs or their relevance to the work completed. And for work orders, we recommend the department collaborate with the Internal Services Department to establish a system for reviewing work order costs charged to the department. We also recommend the department develop written policies and procedures to review the work order expenditures and provide staff training to enhance the accuracy and appropriateness of expenditure reviews. And these findings highlight the need for improved controls and oversight in both conflict of interest compliance and work order expenditures. By implementing the recommended action, the probation department can strengthen its compliance processes and ensure resources are used effectively and appropriately. We'd like to express our appreciation to probation staff for their assistance and cooperation during this audit. I'm available for any questions, and we also have department representatives here for questions as well.
I have two similar questions. First one is the cost of this particular audit.
I do not have that number with me, but I can.
So maybe you sell when he comes up, he can share that with me. And then second question, I see that two of the issues that were raised up were replacement of washer dryer and then some, I think a HVAC unit or UVC air purification system back in, both in 2021 being authorized by the CAO in amounts which I think were above the CAO's limits to amounts to approve. So did either of these items make it back to the Board of Supervisors at some point for retroactive approval, or were they somehow approved? It says that the issues both kind of came up, so I assume they weren't part of the normal budgeting process where the board approved the budget and these were recognized as needing to be done. As I'm reading the report, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, it sounds like the CAO was approached to make these purchases because the systems were kind of limping along and needed to be replaced, and there were some budget savings to make that happen. But did anything ever come to the Board of Supervisors for approval?
I'll pass that question to the department. We didn't receive any explanation during the audit for these findings, so...
I guess I'll ask the probation department to come forward and just clarify on these two items. Was anything brought to the board? And the only reason I ask is these have to be cured as well, as I read it, because the CAO has limits to what they can sign. So, right. Chief, do you know if these came to the board?
Well, I'll explain it this way, and thank you again for the chance to be able to explain. In our response, I did advise regarding the washer-dryer placement and also for the air purification system. There was an opportunity for end of year. We have end of year, you know, funding that we would ask for from the permission from the CAO's office to be able to use some of our unexpended funds for one-time projects. And so that would have been a part of a list of things that we would have gotten authorization from the CAO's office in order to use those instead of returning those funds back to the county. And so I don't think it was a board item that actually took care of the actual amount of the washer and the dryer and for the air purification funding that we had asked for in and above the grant that was received for that. But it was already funding that we already had in our budget that we allowed to be able to use that funding for these special projects that we had at the end of year.
Understood. And no worries. I just want to make sure that we follow appropriate procedures. And fortunately, we have our CAO and county council who are wearing their audit committee hats here today. But maybe they can correct me if I'm wrong. So the spending authority that the CAO has is $200,000, correct? Maybe it's a little more than that. I forget.
Yeah, I think we may be talking about two different issues here. One is the authority to spend funds, you know, as in this case, money that had not been expended within the budget. The other is contracting authority. So I think that's the two separate issues. Unless it was something that was done during the course of an emergency, yes, that would be typically the limits in my authority is the $200,000. So we'll have to verify the contracting authority piece that if it was something that went to that limit or if it was multiple contracts that were underneath that. And I don't know the answer to that question, but if it was contracts and it was over that limit, it would need to be cured by coming back to the board, similar to what we just talked about with ISD.
The washers and dryers were over $200,000?
Yeah, I think I had the amount, $450,000.
and we didn't have a contract for that?
Well, I believe we may have gone through Granger for that purchase. And I say we, ISD.
A question, so with, and maybe ISD might have to help out a little bit. So back in 2001, I'm trying to remember, did the Board of Supervisors authorize a relationship with Granger at some point? And when was that relationship executed by the Board of Supervisors?
Off of a piggyback contract, right?
We've had a relationship with Granger and contracts with them, I believe, for the past 17 to 18 years.
But the current one was off, wasn't it off a piggyback contract?
The current one expires this month. So is it a piggyback on the Emmanuel?
I think the question, though, is whenever it originally came, was it a board contract? So if it's a board contract and these purchases were made within the limits of that contract, then it would not require another contract. So
we have these overarching contracts with suppliers like Granger or Office Depot. And then within the budgetary, the contract is approved to make purchases under those. And then the departments, you know, through ISD, make the purchases out of the Granger or out of the Office, you know, Depot. Some of ours, we're never going to get close to $200,000, but DSS uses $200,000 worth of paper.
Oh, yeah, understood. And what I'm looking at is since both departments were audited, these were identified as issues that came up. What I'm trying to do is make sure that with the authorization for these purchases, which weren't identified originally in the grant, but we had extra money left over to do it, that we had contracts in place which were appropriate with Granger in the case of the washer-dryer, and then two, spending authority to make sure spending authority limits weren't exceeded. Since these were identified, I'm just trying to put all the pieces together to see if there's other things that the Board of Supervisors needs to do to retroactively approve. Because if everything wasn't done right, technically nothing is cured. And since this has been identified in the audit, we've got to make sure everything works appropriately. So if we're ever audited again here, since this was a grant, I just want to make sure if there's an audit by the grantor, they don't find outstanding issues and then ask for money back.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked about under the second finding was around expenditures and work orders and all those kind of things. And so in the last 2 years, we've really made a concerted effort to make sure that we build up our administrative support. We've got six different divisions, and so what we're trying to do under our restructuring is to make sure that there's administrative looks at every expenditure, everything that's going forward, looking at the operational piece of it, and also looking at the administrative piece of that within the division, and then that'll be turned over to, you know, UCL's division in order for us to make sure those are appropriate and placed, you know, under the appropriate kind of funding that does go out for that. So we have made a real concerted effort to make sure that we've got multiple places where we've got some checks and balances.
And then to Oscar's staff, this may be something that you already looked at and it's a non-issue, because I know for us, or at least for me, I only received a single page with the findings and explanation, which is fine. It's like a summary document. So maybe some of the questions I'm asking, you already have detailed information on. So maybe you could speak to that.
As far as if it's what type of contract?
The questions about the Granger contract was good. You looked at that for us to make the purchase from Granger. And then two, do my questions about, did the CAO have authority to approve $450,000? That was already authorized because maybe the Board of Supervisors acted back in 5 years ago when we entered into this new contract with Granger, which allowed for either the purchasing manager at ISD or the CAO to make purchases as long as they were within the confines of the contract that was approved 5 years ago. So did you look at that as well?
For that particular question, we didn't really have details on that. We did find some issues with the Granger contract being a piggyback contract. But as far as that specific, we don't have any details on that.
And when you say Grainger contract being a piggyback contract, it was just stated that we've had a relationship with Grainger for 17 to 18 years. So I assume there was a procurement done, meaning, or an RFP done, or something, or RFQ, request for quotations from different firms, and they, you know, were the best.
Right.
Or we did a piggyback with the state.
With the city of Arizona, some city in Arizona, I believe, is what it originated from.
Well,
as long as they've done, for a piggyback contract, as long as they've done a competitive process that matches ours, the state contracting code allows us to use a piggyback thing, so we don't have to do a full RFP again. But we get guaranteed the lowest rate that anybody gets under that, under those piggybacks.
So the piggyback contract was brought to the Board of Supervisors for approval, and all this was laid out, and 5 years ago, all this was laid out, and I assume, I'm just asking.
But I think the issue that we've seen on the piggyback contract is it doesn't follow the original contract, like what's stated on the original contract. It was brought up to the Board of Supervisors for approval, but it doesn't necessarily follow the original terms of the contract.
Does it follow what the Board of Supervisors approved?
It was approved, yeah, but when it gets presented, with the terms of how the original contract should have been, what the piggyback contract is, but then when during the year, it doesn't necessarily follow that particular, the terms of that original contract.
So I'll tell you, that's not a contract then. So a contract lays out pricing, you're supposed to, you know, if we're guaranteed lowest possible price, and then you're telling me that's not the case, then the purchases are being made and there is no contract. So a piggyback contract, you got to follow the terms of the contract.
Right.
And so if you're telling me that wasn't followed, then it was done without a contract.
Right. I think that was one of the findings too, that it wasn't, the details of the original contract weren't followed.
All right. I think I'm, this is a little bit more confusing and concerning than I wanted it to be, but that's okay. Yes, Usel, please.
Thank you very much. Just to recap, my understanding of the Grainger contract is that we do have, the county did do a piggyback. They did it for a certain specific, for specific items or specific limitations. However, that contract, Grainger, they're a multinational company. They have access to a lot of different resources, and I believe that was one of the issues that we were ordering items that might have not been part of that. So that's to allude what they were talking about. When it's presented to your board, it's presented for a specific purpose. However, throughout the year, you know, you have access to additional items that are under that contract, but that were not actually presented to the board. So technically, it was purchased through the contract. However, it might not have been within the boundaries that it was intended for the county. So it's going to be an interesting way to find a fix, as far as I'm concerned.
It's kind of like the camel's nose that gets under the tent, but once that camel raises its head up.
Catalog.
Yeah. Yes.
If I may add some clarity, the piggyback with Grainger is a procurement agreement, not a board agreement. And per the policy, it's for services, or not services, supplies, which the budget limit is the budget limit of the department. So there is no limit as long as the department budgets for it. And the washer and dryers, I've been informed, were purchased during COVID under that umbrella for the the sanitation of the linens and things at the JJC. I hope that adds some clarity to it. The washer and dryers were brought back annually, which ISD does as capital assets, which we do every year.
So it was under the umbrella of the emergency that we had declared.
Right.
And so if the CAO is signing off using the emergency authority, okay, that makes more sense now. Okay, yeah.
But under a procurement contract, there isn't the same $200,000. The $200,000 limit is for services.
Correct.
The procurement contracts are entered into and are controlled really through the budgetary process and either a purchase order type arrangement.
As long as
we have had some issues with procurement contracts because purchase orders kept getting issued under these procurement contracts, regardless of what, without tracking them you know, to the overall countywide procurement core was a problem.
Correct. With that. And two, when you use a piggyback contract, typically there's prices that are listed, and to Dan's point, you're guaranteed the lowest possible price. But if a piggyback contract was used and this wasn't specified, and then we went to a catalog to make purchases, how did we know that we were still guaranteed the lowest possible price?
Yeah, again, that one was done under that umbrella of the emergency and the urgency of getting that material. But as stated earlier, the piggyback terms and conditions was an audit finding for ISD as well, and that's something that we will be addressing moving forward.
Okay.
Hold on. I've got a quick question. So I'm clarifying what's happening, but I'm more confused about the finding. So there was two exceptions noted for expenditures. What was the exception? That's what I'm still confused about. What was, is it specifically? So what were they? That's a question for the audit team.
So when we tested the supporting documentation that was provided to us, didn't include these additional explanations. So we had reached out to the departments with preliminary findings and asked for additional support to support these costs for these work orders, and we didn't receive any additional explanation.
So it was the explanation which may have included that the rationale behind it, mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes. Okay. So it's just the information that was provided during the audit didn't okay. support the
I see.
The costs.
Okay. I see. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? I don't remember if I did public comment. Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public portion and bring it back to the board.
I'm just going to go back to your you asked a question that did not get answered yet. So, of probation, I think you said I was going to answer the cost of this audit.
Yeah, what was the cost of the audit?
All right. For us, it was $1,466.30.
So a question I have to the audit team, big difference between $74,000 and $1,400. So I assume that how in depth you got with the ISD audit was much more in depth, or maybe I'm missing something. And I see Oscar running.
So Oscar, the auditor controller. So before this audit got started, we met with the CAO's office and we tried to contract it out. We had an audit team that was going to come out and audit, and I think at the time it was going to be like $100,000, and they refused at the last minute. So at that moment, Paul said that we need to get this thing done. So therefore, I said it's going to be a little more expensive because we got a little higher overhead than these audit firms do. So we chose to go ahead and do that, and the audit on the ISD side was a lot more complicated than on the probation side.
So as far as time, then it just comes down to time. You spent
come back to time
exponentially, probably 20 times the amount of time.
And we have to charge what's on the rates for the staff working on it.
Okay, and some of the you've heard some of the dialogue today, Oscar. Some of the questions that I'm asking have you seen enough info in the audit that you believe is there something that needs to come back to the board that's comprehensive that deals with both ISD and probation?
One of the biggest concerns that I have, that I had, and I still do, is the Granger contract. I don't think there was enough competition in there. They kind of just excluded a bunch of vendors and said, hey, we're out, and didn't give anyone else a chance, an opportunity to see if they could adhere to this contract. That was my biggest concern. It still is. So I don't know if we're getting the best rate at the best dollar amount and whether other entities can do the job that Granger can.
Yes.
That was your concern with the Arizona process that it went through or ours?
Well, I'm concerned with our process that we got to go RFP and make sure we're getting the best prize, best bang for the buck for this county.
So you took issue with doing
it
through
the piggyback?
I still
take issue with that, yes. if the board decided and the board knew that this is what we're doing, going to be more expensive, we can get all this stuff, and I'm looking at all the information that was provided by some of the employees from ISD that complained about what they're pricing and all that stuff.
All right. And the comments that you've just made, are they included in either one of the audit findings?
Not per se.
Well, I would, if these are concerns you have, those need to be included in both the ISD as well as the probation.
I think it was addressed that they weren't following their policy as far as the PD forms that they talked about earlier. So generically, it was talked about, not specifically.
All right. Well, it's on the record now.
Yeah, and I can add to Oscar's comments. We did try to get outside auditors to come.
He led us on, and yep, then he turned us on.
I think we only had one, and then they backed out. So if, for whatever reason, it was not a – maybe it was a very large project. So.
Oscar, when you put out RFPs for items that you need?
Uh-huh.
And Granger was the only one that responded?
I didn't put an RFP. I don't think they did either. They said they piggybacked off this contract. So nothing was put out here to say who else can do this type of work or who can provide these.
That was never asked.
No, that was never done.
It seemed we'd get a better price if we put it out for RFP.
Right. Normally when we RFP, we go ahead and select and say, hey, look, we have this going on. We got these audit firms. Six audit firms put in for the audit, and we get a price. We look at it, say we're going to get the best bang for the buck. Not necessarily the least expensive. It's just who can do the job at certain price.
I mean, yeah. What I mean, I'm talking about as far as getting the product that you need. You know, washers, dryers,
right.
That kind of thing. I mean, that isn't put out for.
This wasn't put out on this time. In my opinion, it should have been.
And you got a local company, Ventura TV, that sells to Best Buy. Best Buy can only buy through them locally. And you've got three or four other major companies that have to go through Ventura TV, and they have industrial, they have commercial. I mean, they've got all kinds of.
Well, I think I was told that they wanted to do away with these mall and pop stores and just go to one shop.
They're not mall Granger and pop stores.
And Granger can get everything for them, is what I was told. And I know Ed might be able to answer that more than I can.
So I wasn't with the county when that contract was executed or that procurement, so staff may be able to answer. But for clarity, our purchasing manual and policies allow for piggyback provisions, and it's used throughout the county on a regular basis. On this one, again, the terms weren't exact, and that was, you know, an audit finding that we need to address. But how the genesis of the Granger contract came forward was it was a piggyback, which is allowed in our policies. Now, again, we do need to review and revise our policies moving forward. That's a discussion we can have.
Thank you.
All right. Unless you have anything else you want to share, Oscar?
Not yet.
All right. Seeing no further public comment, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board for acceptance of the report. Or any additional comments they'd like to make.
Move to accept the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion to second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That carries. Next item is 7B, review and approve the Department of Social Services cash receipts compliance audit in fiscal year 2023.
Good morning, Michelle Garcia again from Financial Reporting and Audits. I'm here to present a compliance audit for DSS cash receipts. The purpose of this audit, which is limited in scope, was to evaluate whether the Department of Social Services has adequate internal controls over cash receipts. Specifically, the audit assessed whether cash collections are safeguarded, deposited in a timely manner, and accurately recorded in the department's financial records. Additionally, we evaluated the department's compliance with established internal controls, policies, and procedures. To achieve these objectives, our methodology included reviewing the department's policies and procedures, conducting interviews with department staff, testing selected samples to verify the presence of appropriate supporting documentation, accurate information recorded in the receiving log, and correct reconciliations and compliance with deposit timeliness guidelines outlined in the cash manual. Our audit identified two key findings. First is the lack of effective internal controls. The department's remittance advice detail log policy requires staff logging the check to note who submitted the check and any relevant information associated with it. Out of 60 transactions tested, 15 did not include any information about the individual or unit that submitted the check, compromising the segregation of duties and accountability. Second is the inadequate supporting documentation. Section 2.2 of the cash manual outlines specific deposit timeliness requirements based on the dollar amount of checks. For example, cumulative receipts between $5,000 and $99,000 must be deposited by the next business day, while amounts of $100,000 or more must be deposited the same day. However, the department's remittance advice detail log lacked information on when checks were received. While the log recorded when checks were logged and deposited, the missing receipt date made it impossible to evaluate deposit timeliness for 15 out of 42 transactions tested. For both findings, we recommend that the department refine its policies and procedures to align the required information in the policy with what is actually required in the log. Ensure that the remittance advice detail log captures only the necessary and relevant details, such as the date checks are received and deposited. Train staff on these updated procedures to ensure compliance with both internal policies and the cash manual. By addressing these findings, the department will significantly enhance its internal controls, ensuring better safeguarding of cash receipts and compliance with established guidelines. These improvements will strengthen accountability and operational integrity in cash handling processes. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions, and we have representatives from VSS to answer any questions as well.
Anyone have questions for audit staff? Who are the representatives to speak to this from DSS? Don't be afraid.
I'm not pleading the fifth. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Any comments from members for DSS?
Just one. I noticed you disagreed with the second finding. Just wanted to hear your take. You put a little information in your response.
Yes, it was primarily when we were going through and understanding what the finding really was, we came to the conclusion that what terms we used and how we set up our forms for tracking was not conveying the information, as the auditor indicated, was not conveying the information of what we meant by that particular tracking. And that's really what the difference was. So we've adjusted our forms to make sure that there's no confusion on what we intend to indicate by the dates. And that's really where we didn't see it as a finding. But we understand that there is importance of being clear on what we're tracking.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
So what date were you putting on the log?
We were indicating the date received, actually, on the log itself, and we were following our processes to indicate that we are depositing, and the deposit date is really shown by the deposit itself, right? The deposit date is really shown by the deposit itself, but the log itself was tracking when we were actually receiving, and based on the amounts and the procedures that we have, depositing according to those. So the log itself was not reflecting of both things.
The log didn't have both dates on it.
Yes, we need to be more clear on including both things on the log, not just relying on that everybody's going to understand that based on the process that we're following, that's what it should indicate. So we're not very clear.
So the deposits weren't timely then? Based on this policy on the section 2.2 outline, if it was over 100,000, it should have been deposited that day. So therefore,
no, what our process of deposits we're following, if it's over X dollar amounts we're depositing within the same day, or if not the following day, we're following that. Our logs were indicating when we had received of the funds, and for the most part, that's what it indicates for the deposit. I'll go back and look at the examples. What is?
I think most of them are saying they were depositing in the same.
According to.
But the log didn't have both.
Our logs don't reflect that.
And the deposit date didn't. deposit to show, hey, that's the day we put it in, but there wasn't just on the log.
What it came to light is that we were not being consistent with how we indicate we use the forms, the logs. That's why we weren't agreeing.
So
yeah.
My question, so was the finding accurate or was it inaccurate?
It is accurate based on the fact that what we've developed to track what we do is not accurate. But the deposits themselves were accurately made. How can I? I don't know how else to say that.
The auditor and me.
I know.
The auditor and me.
The finding itself was that the logs were not. That finding is correct. That deposits not being timely, that's what we were.
So the policy wasn't being followed. I mean, at the end of the day.
We didn't build our logs to follow that, the procedure. That.
No, I think the policy, from what I could understand, was followed. However, their logs were unclear. So they were depositing according to policy, but their logs were not clear to demonstrate they actually deposited. So what they're saying is, fix your logs.
Their finding of...
It has to be done on what records.
Yes, and that... Correct.
Well, one thing that should be reflected in what's presented to us is that the logs are wrong, which was done. But then if the auditor's
really
office tested the actual deposit receipts to make sure that the larger deposits were done in a timely manner, you could just state that. And I don't think that was stated, so we're looking for clarification. And if that's what you found, that the larger deposits or larger receipts were deposited same day, but the logs were just not reflecting that,
well, the 15 out of the 42 transactions, we can't really say when they received it because the log didn't indicate that it was received. What they were saying is the date log is the date they received it, but to our understanding, those are two different things.
Got it. So there's no backup. I mean, the log itself, someone has to track, but you'll have a receipt or maybe some type of stamp indicating that the log is backed up by this other information. So there isn't that for some of the receipts,
right,
when
just
we
the
receive
log
the money.
Is what they're approved, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All we have is word then at this point. We have nothing to back that up.
So that's why that
okay.
finding
is correct.
Based on factual. Okay, sorry. This is the accounting.
No, that's...
What we were indicating we didn't agree doesn't necessarily point to the actual deposit. That's it.
Okay. Any other comments from board members? No. These are very important points because we're... Any other comments?
No.
See, that wasn't too bad, was it? All right. Anyone else in the public wishing to comment? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public portion, bring it back, and I'll entertain a motion to approve the audit.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That carries unanimously. Next, we have 7C, review and approve the Department of Social Services Food and Nutrition Services report for quarter ended June 30th, 2024.
Pyher, audit manager with the Financial Reporting Audits Division again. This is an annual agreed upon procedures that we perform for the Department of Social Services. The purpose of this agreed upon procedure is to verify the claims and amounts reported for accuracy for the quarter ending June 30th, 2024. Our procedures involve reviewing assurance that the information on the report is accurate and can be supported by internal accounting records. We also review for assurance that the beginning and ending balances on the FNS 209 report are supported by automatic claims, management systems, and case records. Our results of the procedures yielded no issues with the three different types of claims that we review. And I'm available for any questions, and we also have department.
Questions on this? Seeing none, anyone in the public wishing to comment on this? Hearing and seeing none, I'll close the public portion. Entertain a motion for approval of the report.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. Next item is D, review and receive the Fresno County IHSS Public Authority Independent Auditors Reports and Financial Statements for the year ended June 30th, 2022.
Good morning. This is a presentation really of our yearly review of financial statements for the IHSS NPA, which stands as an outside entity of the county with the board sitting as its board. Brown Armstrong was who performed the audits for both fiscal year 21-22 and 2021 and 21-22. They used, I'm going to go ahead and read out of the report. They conducted the audit in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the United States with America and standards application of financial audits contained in government auditing standards. There was no findings of the audit. Everything was found in compliance. Don't have something to present except to indicate that. The audit is for how the statements are presented and for review of our controls, internal controls.
So some general questions I have for you, because I know when we look at the IHSS program, and I'm on page 5 of the audit report itself, it shows total program revenues of, in this particular year, 2022, was just under $79 million. And then expenditures came in slightly less for a positive change in that position of about $95,000. But my question is I'm looking at, like, in program revenues, you've got federal and state revenues, and then you have realignment revenue, county contribution. So just to be clear, I want to be clear on the revenues that are coming in. So state and federal, obvious, come from the federal government, state government. Realignment revenue, that's 1991 realignment?
Only, yes.
Any 2011 realignment in that, or you don't get any of the 2011 for this program?
For the PA 2011... No.
And so just 91 realignment. And then looking county contribution, that's NCC, net
yes.
county cost or net county revenue.
Yes.
And then what's the other revenue?
Oh, the other revenue is, so as the PA stands its own org outside of 5610, our biggest Department of Social Services administrative org. However, we have staff that do functions for both either Department of Social Services, IHSS, and or vice versa. Department of Social Services staff will do functions for the PA, and we charge each other to be
internal,
able to reflect
internal
that.
Internal charges.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's what that would be. Other revenue is just internal charges.
Depending on the activities that we're performing, staff's performing.
And a question I have, so when we look at the audit, look at revenues and everything, from 2022, the budget that was approved by the Board of Supervisors for the 21-22 year also match the expenditures that the auditor laid out here, correct? I might have missed that in the audit report itself. Did they take a look at the county budget that was approved and then any amendments to that budget? And then
yes, that's usually where the information starts from. It is based on, because we are still bound by the authority that we're given when those budgets are adopted.
I missed it in the 60, then it's there, 16, and I missed it. That's all, I wanted to identify that. And then realignment revenue, I assume that with the realignment revenue you have, that continues, there's revenues that we receive annually.
Yes.
And the realignment revenue that we've identified here, the 1991 realignment revenue, that's not all the revenue we have, because there are reserves in the realignment revenue accounts that we have as well,
yes,
correct?
Yes, this is only reflective of what is the contribution for PA and IHSS from 1991. That's all.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? One other question I have. So you show net position actually increasing. So while the Board of Supervisors approves your budget, where is the net revenue in this case? Where is that recognized, or where does that money go? Because we approve a new budget every year, and to my understanding, the Board of Supervisors there's no assets of this particular program per se. There's just revenues that come in. So since you had excess revenue at the end of the year, it goes somewhere. So how is that identified and where does it go?
As you know, we sit in the general fund for both IHSS 6420 and 5611. It falls in the general fund. So that position would be reflected in the general fund. You will not see or find, this is not a reflection of a fund sitting outside of that.
So here's another tricky question. These things are important. So looking at the different program revenues that were allocated to the program and the fact that the net position ended at $301,000, is the $301,000, is it federal funds, state funds, is it NCC?
So we've had a couple of conversations with my team just on that to really, what does it really mean? Do I have money that I can do something with, really? And really, it is just a reflection of how we put these documents together to reflect all activities of the year. And those activities include transactions that we make in our financials, as well as transactions kept in the records, the internal records of the department to make adjusting entries. When we end the year, we account for the full year of the budget, including the extended 12 period, when we put in our claims and therefore count for revenues. There is also the process that for claims, we do cash basis. So this document is a reflection of modified accrual in which we're kind of mixing both things, right? We're mixing cash and we're mixing what's actually happening, cash claiming. And there's a difference between what I am going to count as activities in this particular report and what I'm going to claim and where those claimed revenues, which are considered, I'm going to take the fourth quarter to give you the example. During the fourth quarter of the year, we're collecting information and we're collecting all the activities that happen in that fourth quarter. Some of those activities do not get claimed because we're a cash-based claim for the program. It doesn't get captured into the first quarter claim of the following year. So that's a constant process that we have. So there's difference between fourth quarter and first quarter. So it's always, for the purposes of how we end the year, we use our financials. And in that financials, we also do include the accrual period, the extended period, to make sure that we don't overuse what has been allotted as far as both budgeted and county contribution.
So to the CAO, I think I'm correct in saying this, but really the looking at your revenues that come in to make the program work, the last revenues that you want to use are the NCC.
Correct.
So if there's any money left at the end of the year, to the extent possible and allowable by law, it should be NCC, because county policy says that any subventive revenues that you receive for your program are spent first, correct?
Correct.
So is there a way that we can, as we deal with the auditors, because it's important for us to show, to the extent allowable by law, that the $301,000 is NCC that's left over, right? Correct?
Yeah. I believe that we can identify how much exactly comes out of the federal funding and how much left over from NCC.
Because as I understand it, this $301,000 at the end of the year has to go back into the Treasury pool, right? Because the Treasury pool holds all cash, right?
Right. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we're allotted throughout the budget, we use our financial statements to make sure we're staying to par, to assure that we're not using more cash than we have coming in, right? And to assure that we're only using no more than the NCC cash. I don't think this is really a reflection. I guess what I'm trying to say is not really a reflection of, and we'll go back and continue looking at surplus. I don't see it that way. It's just a matter of timing of what we put in these documents to reflect actual activities happening, transactions that happening throughout the year. We'll try and go back and maybe provide something more on how these documents are put together to see if there's, to come to the same, to give you the answer of whether there is actually cash that should be falling to the county.
The reason this is important is the county receives revenues from many different sources. Most of the revenues that we get from state and federal government, from realignment, and even internal charges can only be used for very specific purpose. Internal charges have to be tracked, followed appropriately, and it's just a one program giving to another, and really it's a journal entry, I would imagine, is all that really is. But the NCC is the most critical cash component the county has because it is the most flexible and can be used across all departments. So if at the end of the year, if there is a net position which is growing or we have additional assets there, we want to make sure we allocate it appropriately. And based upon county policies the board's put into place, subventive funds, money that's targeted for specific purpose has to be spent first. And then NCC is burned up last. Yeah.
And that's true about that policy, but with the IHSS, you have a maintenance of effort. There's a certain share of costs that we have to pay for.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that if you, I think this is more of an accounting mechanism to keep track of the claims and the revenues as they're coming in than an actual pack of money that's sitting there of $300,000, which we
can
divide. And if we can divide it up into federal, state, and and county, if we take that out and then put that back into the system, we might not be, it may not,
in order
at
to
some
like,
point we'd have to put more net county cost back in to draw that money. So I'm not sure it makes a difference.
In order to explain that the net position, positive net position, we would also be bringing in more than just this particular year's information, because that's the only way that it will make sense. In addition to that, we're also found, like in page 4, the 172 due to county, we have been reporting this particular number on a continuing basis, because what it takes to remove, you have to have backup documentation to remove the information, otherwise it becomes a finding in the thing, in the review, sorry. We're going to go back and look at that, because I believe that's adding to it, and that is just tracking, like a documentation tracking, really. So I don't have it sitting anywhere. It really is documentation tracking. So we'll go back and refine that and try and give a better explanation outside of the audit, so that we can explain how we put this together.
All right, that's fine.
I agree with the spirit of what the chairman is saying, and the only thing I would say with this one is, if you have additional revenue or leftover, some of this also could be timing of when revenue is coming
in. That's what I'm saying.
We don't receive revenue from the federal or state side of this unless we're paying the net county cost portion. But on the discretionary funding, we've got net county cost, we've got 1991 realignment. Typically, for everything else we do in the county, we're going to do that. But as council stated, within the confines of this program, there are certain percentages. If we ever were at a higher amount, those percentages change, and there's a greater amount of cost at the net county cost portion. But,
and to beat a dead horse a little bit further, so with IHSS, I want to say in 2022, we had 35 million hours authorized.
Yes.
And so with 35 million hours, did we completely go up to 35 million hours in total time that was given to providers? If the answer is no, let's say we did 34 million hours, then that 1 million hours that was left on the table should proportionately be broken back down, because, yes, the MOE says that we're to 8%, right? Offer 8% of the total cost of the program?
Authorized hours versus paid hours, our budget and our reimbursement is only based on what we incur, what we actually pay out. So regardless of what's authorized, we're only paying for the health benefit portion of those hours, because that's all we pay for in the MOE, for what actually gets paid out. So there is no savings in, there's no cash savings to Fresno County and or the state. For 35,000 hours authorized, 34 paid out. The whole cost is based on what actually gets paid out.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll have an opportunity to look at some of this other stuff further later, but I appreciate this exercise in insanity that I'm taking us through right now, but thank you. Makes sense to me, kind of. Yeah.
Chairman, if I may add, Anathina Garcia. I just put up page 6, which is, it gives us the detail of what that fund balance is, which is unassigned. So that is technically all your NCC. If it would be federal or state, it would be restricted. So, but to Bruna's point, if they are using those funds for the following year, they've already been not accrued, but assigned or not assigned. Those aren't the words. Allocated for, thank you, allocated for the next fiscal year. But at the end of, at June 30, 2022, these are unassigned funds, which is NCC. If they were federal or state, they would be restricted.
And because our county budget goes all the way to September, is it is the reason that we're not seeing the full spend down because we still have a couple more months, maybe?
No, the budget is a different...
This is a different cycle?
Right.
Okay.
It's just the timing in which we approve our budget.
And one last comment, then I'll stop. Paige, who I think is still... Paige, this is your... So Paige is the budget director for CAO's office. Hopefully I got her title right. I don't know. This is your understanding as well for how we are budgeting? There's no surprises here?
No surprises.
All right. Thank you. I'm good. All right. Seeing no further public comment, I'll bring it back to the board for any more questions you have or a motion.
I'll make a motion.
To accept the report, we have a motion. Is there a second? I have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. Next is review and receive Fresno County IHSS Public Authority Independent Auditor's Report for June 30th, 2023.
I thought in my presentation I said 21, 22, and 22, 23, so the same stance, the exact same report.
Yep, nothing new to report from there. Anyone in the public wishing to comment? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board for approval of the report.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. Finally, item F, review and approve the 2025 Audit Committee meeting dates. Anyone in the public wishing to comment on the dates? January 10th, April 11th, July 11th, October 10th. Seeing no one in the public, I'll bring it back. And I know that sometimes things come up. I don't keep my calendar a year in advance, but I'm sure my staff does. But if there are any issues, I'm sure we can just let staff know and we can make some adjustments if that's necessary. So I'll take a motion for approval of these dates.
Motion
and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. Next is staff updates. Oscar, you have anything new? All right, I think we've worn Oscar out. Adjournment, it's only an hour and 15 minutes, it's nothing. All right, next on the agenda is adjournment. Anyone would like to make a motion or do we want to stay and just keep talking about numbers? We have a motion by Carrie. Is there a second? A motion second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.